If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Keep in mind the end client, the tenant, as probably the most important thing at the beginning of the process, figuring out what that tenant looks like, you know, where he works or, you know, where they work, what their income is, what their needs are. If you figure that out at the front end of the process and let that guide your way, you're going to have a much easier time building a built for rent portfolio than most others.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Adam Stern has spent the last 10 years in the institutional single-family residence industry, having co-founded a real estate technology and brokerage company in early 2010. He later sold that in 2018. Adam is also an authority on the acquisition and disposition of SFR portfolios nationwide and has helped facilitate SFR transactions totaling hundreds of millions in volume, and was one of the earliest to recognize that portfolios of stabilized single-family rentals were a product that deserved a specialized service and built a robust network of owners and buyers active in the space. Adam, welcome to the show.
Samuel, thanks for having me.
Man, this is great. This is great. Hey, there's not many people that get away with getting my full name off their tongue. So you've done it well. I appreciate that. That's great.
Not at all. Samuel, that's not really a hard name to say. I've got three brothers, so all of our names are, you know, at max 5-6 letters. So
Right. No, that's great. That's great. Adam, excited to have you on today. I mean, you've got a niche experience in building single family rental portfolios and selling them off to institutional investors. And I know if you can kind of give us a brief rundown, the same question to ask everybody is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, sure. I have to go over it. My kind of arc in my career has been a bit unusual because I started off in the residential real estate business, the regular brokerage business, not as a broker, but kind of in the ancillary businesses like title insurance and things like that. Me and a partner launched a company that was aimed at the start of the housing meltdown in 2008. Our big idea was to train real estate brokers on how to work with investors using an online training program. So I was the guy that would go out and do small group presentations to real estate offices all over the country, selling this online training program, teaching people what a cap rate was and teaching people the fundamentals of real estate investing. And we ended up building a really nice network all over the country of about 5,000 agents. And then, you know, in 2008, when the housing meltdown happened, it was about 2009 or late 2009, early 2010, when a company called Blackstone through Blackstone started raising money on Wall Street in order to buy foreclosures and then turn them into rentals. So me and my partner at the time decided, hey, we've got all these agents that know what a cap rate is. Why don't we market to these firms and have them use our real estate agents to acquire properties all over the country off the MLS and then kind of buy them? Because they were buying real estate through real estate brokers anyway. We said, why, they should be using our real estate brokers because our real estate brokers are trained. So we ended up turning that business into a platform to acquire single family homes on the MLS through a large agent network. And then we turned that business into a real estate portfolio trading platform where mid-cap and small-cap owners of residential rental properties could sell their properties to large-scale institutional investors. And I kind of got experience as a very specialized broker that didn't sell one house, didn't do open houses, didn't do anything except package or take packages of SFR, single-family rental properties, and package them and analyze them and then serve them up to the largest institutional owners and buyers in the country. And that's basically where I cut my teeth. And it wasn't too long ago where a lot of these same buyers that were buying these portfolios from me said, hey, doesn't really make a whole lot more. It makes more sense to build new construction product as rentals than it does to buy existing products. They still buy existing product all the time, but this new wave called build for rent came about and they were all kind of coming to me saying, hey, Adam, we'd like to identify more build for rent projects. So I decided to start my now company called Strata SFR, really designed for two things: selling SFR portfolios to the institutions like I always have, but like 90% of my time is really identifying build for rent projects all over the country. From I'm the Southeast normally, you know, I work from Raleigh down to Florida as far west as Alabama, and I can tell you more about how I do it. But I source build for rent projects and then serve them up to those same large scale capital sources.
Right. I mean, one, I don't even know where to go with this because there's a thousand different questions I want to ask. Let's focus more on the build for rent side of things now. Like, how do you find the land? How do you find the builders? I mean, these are a lot of complex moving pieces.
Yeah.
So talk to us about kind of the system that you've had to build so that you can continue. Obviously, I mean, if you can only bring one deal a year to people, they don't really care. So you've had to build something to where you have, you know, continuous success in serving up good deals that your buyers want to buy.
Absolutely. And I could talk about the real estate side. I could spend all day talking about the real estate side. I could also spend all day talking about how to find deals and how to create velocity in your brokerage business to continually find new opportunities, you know, work through the opportunities, figure out which are the good and which are the bad, and then talk about the actual brokerage and deal-making side of it. I guess I'll just skim on top of both of those subjects because I feel like your audience...
Yeah, go for it.
Right. Okay. What I did to start off with, I kind of surveyed about a dozen and a half large-scale capital sources that all wanted to buy in the Southeast. And I try to figure out the common threads that they all had so that I can kind of come up with a target buy box that would fit all of them in some kind of way. And they were all nuanced enough where like this buy box that I created in the Southeast means when I find a project, I've got a lot of different capital sources I could show it to, but it might work better for one than the other. And generally like the high level buy box that I created by talking to these capital sources were really simple. Build for rent companies generally wanted to be in a number of markets and the markets were really defined by population.
Okay.
You look at the Southeast, the top, call it top 20 markets in the Southeast, like Raleigh, Charlotte, Orlando, Jacksonville, Tampa, middle Florida, places like Lakeland, some secondary markets like Columbia, South Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina, Greenville, North Carolina, Winston-Salem. They all want to be in these markets with really solid fundamental demographics and solid fundamental job growth. So kind of I got to know the markets they wanted to be in. And to me, like, you know, certain markets are a no-brainer. Like I live in Charlotte. I pick Charlotte because it has a phenomenal, you know, demographic and tailwind behind it. So everyone wants to be in Charlotte. Everyone pretty much wants to be in like Jacksonville, Orlando. I stayed away from South Florida because I don't like foreign countries. Kidding around. So I picked a handful of markets in the Southeast that I knew everyone wanted to buy in. And then I started digging into the attributes to the real estate that people wanted to buy. And the size of the deal was really first and foremost. A lot of my clients are multifamily owners. They own single site multifamily properties. They like managing a property with a single leasing office on site, a single amenity, right? So they wanted, you know, projects between like the sweet spot is really 175 units because then they could have an on-site leasing office. They could have an on-site amenity. A lot of the firms that I deal with, they already have assets in markets like Charlotte and Raleigh and Jacksonville, or Orlando, and they just want to add on to their portfolio. So they can go as low as like 50, 55 units because they own assets that they can use their current management infrastructure to manage anyway. So like, you know, the size of the opportunities were really a big driving factor. Second was where the dirt is located. So like, you know, just like multifamily, you know, a big part of your audience is multifamily. You want to have the actual site located no more than call it 12 or 15 minutes away from a major interstate. It needs to be easy to get to, can't be too rural. It needs to be close by certain amenities. Like, you know, some of the ones that lives in a single family subdivision, they don't want to drive 20 minutes to a grocery store, right? They like the grocery store to be right down the road. Same thing with shopping, same thing with retail. So it has to have the kind of amenity base that, you know, if you're not going to build amenities on site, which, you know, most, unless they're mixed use subdivisions, they don't have. They want to be close to a thoroughfare and a close to these amenities that most people want in their daily lives. If it checks all those boxes, then you kind of got to look at it in terms of the numbers. Do the numbers make sense? And really, that's where knowing SFR, knowing the, you know, single family or rental segment comes into handy more than anything else. When you build a deal, you think I kind of think of a deal in terms of like Lego blocks. You have the base, which is the land. So sometimes you deal with landowners who don't know anything about building or developing. They just own land. They're like farm owners or farmers' kids. And, you know, then you got to layer the next layer on top, which is the entitlement process. This is generally where a developer comes into play and how much it costs to develop a land from raw land into approved land to start building, you know, units. And then when you have the entitled land, then you have the actual pushing around of dirt, the actual building of the units. And you need a building company to do this. And usually you need a company to do the horizontal work, put in the infrastructure, like the gas, the electric, the water, the sewer, and then you have the builder. So like what I do is once I analyze all these different components and I figure out whether or not a site works, I'll talk to the landowner and I'll bring in a developer and I'll bring in a builder and I'll kind of build this thing called a build for rent project. And if the number makes sense and it hits a certain yield for the buyers that I have on the other side of the transaction, I'll put all these different components together and I'll kind of wrangle them. And then I'll bring them to a capital source that I feel like it would fit well. And if it does fit, I've got my capital sources come in, they buy the land or the lots or the buildings, and they start funding the entire process.
Now that's a lot of, it seems like you could end up spinning your wheels, doing a ton of research and a ton of homework presenting this.
Yeah.
And then in the end, everybody's like, nah, we don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
How often does that happen? Or you just know your buyers well enough to know you're not, when you're monkeying with a bad project and you just walk? I mean, what does that look like?
I feel like that's the secret sauce that makes Strata exceptionally good at what we do. I probably look at 10, for every 10 projects I look at, I find one that's worth bringing to my buyers, right?
Now you've gone all the way through the due diligence process. You've talked to all your horizontal, you've talked to your, you know, builders, you've talked to everybody you need to talk to.
Not exactly, yes. So let me better explain. Out of 10 projects I might look at, I might get as far as looking at the demographics of an area to realize it's not right, right? It's too rural, you know, it's not next to enough amenities, it's not next to a thoroughfare. As soon as I figure out that bottom level doesn't fit, I don't analyze it anymore. I just kind of say it's a pass.
Right.
Some project I might get as far as saying, I like the area, I like the demographics and where the dirt sits, but like the rents are too low in the area. I just can't get the rents to support, you know, the house I know I need to build there. So like, you know, the yields are too low, in which case I won't talk to a buyer or a builder. I'll just kind of say, no thanks, the rents aren't right here. And in other instances, I might go all the way through liking everything about a project. You know, the dirt's in the right spot, the numbers make a whole lot of sense, but like the situation is not correct. Like the person that owns the land wants too much money, or their timing is off, or they're hard to work with, or there's some other kind of dynamic that says, you know what? It's too much of a headache. I'd rather kind of find greener pastures. Every once in a while, you get, you know, kind of all the stars align and you got like the right piece of land with the right seller at the right price, and you got the right developer with the right builder, and everything works. And that's when I say, this is a project that I want to bring out to, you know, my investors. And I get behind it. I put my word behind it. I say, this is the reason why I think it's worth investing in. And generally my intuition and my understanding of the segment's good enough to, you know, when I pick a project, I generally end up moving it and end up placing.
And I hate to get personal on this, but I am curious, how do you monetize this? Do you get paid on the acquisition and build out? Or, I mean, do you stay in the middle of it all the way? Or I guess, what does that look like? What's your structure look like?
Yes. So we're a brokerage and consulting company, right? So we get paid for whatever value we bring to the deal, which means if we end up facilitating a land sale and we, you know, we pick the developer and the builder that we think are right for the project, and our buyer only buys the land and then brings in their own developer and brings in their own builder, we'll only make a fee on the land.
Oh, wow.
So if like we're doing a deal right now in Greenville, South Carolina, where my clients are coming in buying the raw land and I'm making a fee on the land, they're using the development company to put in the infrastructure. And when they use the development company, I'll make up another fee because I put them together. And they'll eventually, hopefully, use my builder, and my fee's also built into the building contract. So like I'm a big proponent and a big, my focus is on offering value and making a fee based on that value. So right. If you think about, you know, layering the blocks in, I kind of make a fee whenever, you know, my client uses any part of that stack that I put together.
Right. No, that's interesting. That's very interesting. That's a unique, probably not, but it, you know, it's not something we hear about very often. You know, somebody like yourself taking those opportunities and putting all the pieces in place. That's a lot of work.
Good. I wanted to mention it. It's an interesting model, I think, because I look at marketplace businesses and I look at brokerage, like traditional brokerage businesses, and I'm kind of neither one of those animals, because if you're a marketplace, then you offer a platform on which to essentially sell other people's assets, right? There are plenty of marketplace platforms out there that do exactly that. Like 10X is one of the largest commercial marketplaces out there. They're essentially a place brokers and owners and buyers can go to transact.
Right.
There are large scale brokerage companies that take listings. They like take your listing and then they package it and then they go out there and they market it broadly. And that's more of a traditional brokerage model where you're taking a listing, you're making a commission for selling that listing, but you're essentially putting a massive marketing strategy and a massive marketing support behind it. I do neither one of those things because I almost put myself in the position of the investor where like I'm telling the sellers, the owners, the people that have the assets, what's good, bad, or ugly.
Right.
And I'm depending on my understanding of what my buyers want so that I don't bring my my deals to, I don't market them broadly generally. I'll just pick and choose what buyer they're right for. And if a buyer says, no, it's not right for us, I'll go to the next one because it's not my model to create a jump ball, to create all that much competition. I do create competition, but in a very controlled way.
Right. Yeah. These are people you're probably picking up the phone call and saying, hey, you know, this is an opportunity. Do you want it or pass?
Right.
No, that's interesting. So these, I know you said a lot of your capital sources have, you know, funds in the multifamily space. And one of the things that we commonly hear, obviously, in multifamily is that it's great, you know, to have all your roofs in one location or, you know, maybe it's multiple buildings, but you basically, you can scale with those types of assets. And one of the, you know, common complaints we hear about single family, I know you kind of talked about this a little bit because you can have management on site, but still now you have an independent HVAC system, independent roofing, independent plumbing. I mean, you've got all these different now systems that are prone to fail and then have more management, and I would think overhead in single family than you do multifamily. Why are people taking, and I'm sorry, long way to get to this question, but why are people taking raw land and not just building apartments on it? Why put single family?
Yes, great question. And it's kind of a question that came to sharper focus over the last year with the whole COVID pandemic really coming into to shape. Any project I look at, numbers and sense wise, as long as like the area is zoned for multifamily, multifamily almost always makes more sense on paper because you can get higher density, you can get more revenue. It makes more sense. But like what the people in my industry understand, the single family rental industry understand is, there is a entire class of people that are coming out of multifamily now and choosing the single family home as a place they want to live and don't necessarily want to buy the single family home because they lived, you know, for whatever circumstance, whether it be them wanting the flexibility of being able to move jobs or whether or not they don't have the down payment because, you know, they just don't have the money to do it, or whether because of everything that's happening in our world right now scares the heck out of them and they don't want to make the commitment. The single family rental space has seen a fairly steady uptick in people renting single family houses as opposed to buying single family houses or as opposed to moving into multifamily houses. And I think that's just kind of a sign of the times where, like, if you thought about the idea of renting a single family house, like, you know, 15 years ago, you really had one option. You had to go out there and probably deal with a mom and pop landlord that were managing a single house, didn't really know what they were doing. Some of them were good, some of them were bad, but it wasn't really an experience like it is today. Now you have large scale companies that have really solved the puzzle about, you know, everything's new, you know, everything's kind of maintained and, you know, and built around your needs. A lot of these built for rent subdivisions, they're tailored to a specific kind of demographic where the schools have to be good. You know, the amenities that are offered are kind of conducive to the people that want to live there. So in a long-winded way, I think the invention of the single family rental professional, single family rental portfolio has created a client for that portfolio. And they're deciding to rent that asset instead of rent in multifamily or instead of buying.
Right. What does the return structure look like for them? I mean, is it better in single family or is it worse? Like what does that look like?
I think it's probably in the same realm of different kind of multifamily assets. If you look at like C-class, like if you look at multifamily and asset classes types, and I don't know this well because I'm not a multifamily expert, but like I understand that they call it like lower level, like higher yielding C type of assets in multifamily all the way up through B and A, which are like the trophy properties that yield the worst. Single family is kind of the same animal where people are buying things that are in rougher neighborhoods that are lower rent bands. And we call those kind of assets in rougher areas and higher yielding assets, C properties. And sure, you get a better return, but the risk is higher because it's generally in a more risky area. It's going to have a more risky tenant base. the need for maintenance is going to be higher. So on paper, it looks better. And then you have other assets like in middle-class areas and like really high-scale areas offering different kinds of yields. I think if you looked at multifamily, like I think like A assets to like C assets in multifamily range from like mid-4 cap rates all the way to like, you know, double-digit cap rates. I think single family is probably the same animal. Like when you look at projects that are, you know, from C assets to A assets, you're going anywhere from like, you know, 4% cap rates all the way to double-digit cap rates. I think it's pretty conducive, you know, to multifamily or comparable.
And you would say that's even true in the build for rent space?
Build for rent, specifically build for rent, I would say that the yields are pretty homogenous for the type of assets most are going after right now. And when you think about what most people are doing in the build for rent space, most people are looking for things like I just described, like, you know, middle-class neighborhoods with good schools and decent demographics, and they're building, you know, in a certain, you know, value band from call it like the mid 100s all the way up to like the mid 200s or even the high 200s. If you look at that, what people are building, I think you're probably going to get a better yield from build for rent than you would with multifamily, just because there's less of an active secondary market for it, right? So if you build a multifamily asset, there's a very well-defined and well-developed marketplace of people that are willing to buy at very defined cap rates. The single family build for rent market is less developed. So people are building to higher cap rates because when, like my clients, when they build a project to a certain cap rate, their exit is at an assumed cap rate that's lower, right? But they don't really know what that lower cap rate is. So they're being cautious and building to probably a higher than necessary cap rate to achieve that spread. But no one really knows where that spread is right now. So it's a big guessing game. There are a few trades that went on in the build for rent sector, which kind of have shown people where those spreads will be probably. And I could talk more about that, but you know, it's still developing.
Right. No, that was gonna be my next question is what does the exit look like, you know, for these guys building this stuff? So that's super, super cool. Hey, let's jump in here to the final four, if we can. If you were to distill everything you know about the build for rent space and say somebody was interested in this field, what's one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking into this asset class?
If someone was interested in doing what I do or just jumping into the space?
Yeah, or even just coming to you as an investor. I mean, whatever you want to define that as. Say somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want to invest in the build for rent space. You know, what would you tell them?
I tell them to form their base theory on the space first. Really come up with call it a thesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Figure out what your thesis is first, because I see a lot of new capital coming in without really much of a defined thesis about where to buy and what to buy and how they want to manage it. They just know they like the space and they want to buy something and they want to deploy capital into it. But when I talk to people that don't have that defined theory, that defined thesis, it's really hard to know where to go in terms of the market they want to go into, where in the market they want to go into, with a rent band, you know, how they're going to manage these things. So what I would say is for any investor coming to the space, do some research on the market you want to be in and why. Keep in mind the end client, the tenant, as probably the most important thing at the beginning of the process, figuring out what that tenant looks like, you know, where he works or, you know, where they work, what their income is, what their needs are. If you figure that out at the front end of the process and let that guide your way, you're going to have a much easier time building a build for rent portfolio than most others.
Gotcha. No, that's fantastic. When it comes to staying on top of your game, what's one thing you're currently doing?
Technology. Technology is a big thing with me. I realize that I am just one person. And in order to really be valuable to more than just a handful clients that, you know, that come to know me and, you know, that love me because I do a lot of work with them, there's more and more people out there that I can't help because I'm just one person. So in my business this year, you know, probably around June or July, we're coming out with some really cool technology that's akin to a real estate sharing platform that helps off-market brokers and off-market real estate people trade their off-market real estate in a more trackable and a more scalable way. I could talk for another hour on this concept of off-market versus on-market.
Right.
Everything I do is off market. I don't have a marketplace that I actually go to and trade real estate on. So we're coming out with some really cool technology in June, July that enable people like me that are in this off market arena to more effectively and scalably share real estate.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Adam, when it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Yeah, it's a good question. I got four sons and I think about this a lot because, you know, as much as I try to keep them in the bubble of our lives and not let anything bad happen to them, I want to expose them to the needs and the hardships that everyone goes through. We try to find local charities and local ways to get involved, food shelters, doing things for a community that include not only caring for the homeless, but also giving back by taking people in or trying to get involved in charities that help immigrants, you know, help people get acclimated to the American lifestyle. And there are a few charities that we support locally in our backyard that we can really get involved in a hands-on way. And I like that. I like actually seeing and experiencing and have my kids experience firsthand helping people. It's a really special thing.
Right. No, that's awesome. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you and specifically hear more about this, off-market platform you're developing, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you could catch me on LinkedIn. Follow me. I'll be putting out this opportunity to do a beta test for our technology platform on LinkedIn. It's Adam Stern, Strata SFR, pretty easy to find. And if you want to get in contact with me, just go to www.stratasfr.com and I'll be easy enough to find.
Awesome. Adam, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks, Samuel. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.